What rich blessings are ours? A meditation by Bruce Southworth. What rich blessings are ours? What privileges we share for so many gifts, for so many blessings, for so many riches. Amid so much suffering, we give abundant thanks. For a fellowship of religious seekers and activist hearts, we give thanks. For the strength and courage we give one another by our presence here, we give thanks. For the good food for the body and for the service of those who prepared it, we are grateful. We are mindful of those who must go hungry or homeless or live with ragged clothes. We would be mindful that to those to whom much is given, much is demanded. For all blessings, remembered and forgotten, known and unknown, for the morning's light and even the evening's dark, we give thanks. We're going to have our prayer and then a silent meditation. And when the music commences after the silent meditation, it's time to come forward and light a candle on the wall, if you wish, to focus on special events, memories, or hopes. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clear blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things.
My reading this morning is from the writings of the Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker, whom you've heard from before, through me. She is the Dean of the Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley, California, one of two specifically Unitarian Universalist theological schools. And she writes this. In the midst of a world marked by tragedy and beauty, there must be those who bear witness against unnecessary destruction and who, with faith, stand and lead in freedom with grace and power. There must be those who speak honestly and do not avoid seeing what must be seen of sorrow and outrage or tenderness and wonder. There must be those whose grief troubles the water while their voices sing and speak refreshed worlds. There must be those whose exuberance rises with lovely energy that articulates earth's joys. There must be those who are restless for respectful and loving companionship among human beings, whose presence invites people to be themselves without fear. There must be those who gather the congregation of remembrance and compassion, draw water from old wells, and walk the simple path of love for neighbor. And there must be communities of people who seek to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with God, who call on the strength of soul force to heal, transform, and bless life. There must be religious witness. I have a dream. I have a dream. That's a statement that makes many of us remember Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his speech delivered in Washington, D.C. along the mall. He stood at the Lincoln Memorial in August of 1963. His words deeply influenced many, many persons around the world, including me, as a teenager in Northern Ohio, getting ready to leave home. King articulated dreams that were at that time only vague in my mind, dreams that would sustain and challenge me all the years since then, dreams that are important to me because they enable me to do ministry with you. Maybe some of you think that all ministers do is dream, that our pie-in-the-sky idealism makes us incapable of living in the real world. But the way I see it, a minister needs to call upon a combination of idealism and practicality, needs to be an idealist who knows how to read a balance sheet. I find that examining my dreams is a daunting task, if I'm to be honest about it. In order to tell you my dreams, I must undertake a self-examination process. If these are indeed my dreams and my goals, then how far along am I in realizing them? Am I making any progress, or am I just fooling myself? Today I'm going to limit myself to three dreams. I want to explain to you what my dream is, how the dream influences my life, and who has helped me along the way. And I want to hear about your dreams as well. So please accept this as a standing invitation to tell me about your dreams. First of all, I have a dream that I can be an instrument of peace. You may be familiar with this poem that I have adapted slightly from the prayer of Saint Francis of Assisi. God, make us an instrument of thy peace, that where there is hatred, we may bring love, where there is wrong, we may bring the spirit of forgiveness, where there is discord, we may discover and reveal harmony. Where there is error, we may embody truth. Where there is doubt, we may bring the spirit of inquiry. Where there is despair, we may bring hope. Where there are shadows, we may bring light. Where there is sadness, we may bring solace. And the prayer goes on. I often use this particular prayer at the end of memorial services, and I find that it does seem to comfort and strengthen the mourners. Now, peace can exist on many levels. Saint Francis prayed for peace among persons, but most of my writing and thinking has been in the area of peace among nations. Indeed, this was the area of my doctoral dissertation. In that document, which so long ago, but now it seems vaguely familiar, I asked, can the religious community affect the arms race? I asked, how are we all influenced by a sense of impending doom when nations seek war instead of peace? And how can we in the religious community come to a better understanding of power? And how can we use that power to decrease the probability of continued war among nations? In seeking answers to my questions about being an instrument of peace, I discovered the work of Hannah Arendt, the German political philosopher whose views were so controversial during and after her life. Power, says Arendt, springs up when people act in concert. This power, people acting in concert, is political power and is, she says, the very opposite of violence. Power is never the property of an individual, she says, but rather it belongs to a group and exists as long as the group exists. My thesis is that religious communities can use their political power to stem the arms race, encourage nonviolent resistance, and act for justice. Now, what I wrote was the academic manifestation of my seeking to be an instrument of peace. In real life, there are many ways to be such an instrument, and it is my hope that my dream of peace and justice can influence the congregations I serve. Now, who has helped me along the way? One role model who sustains me during some of the hardest times in my life comes from the book The Plague by Albert Camus. The main character is Dr. Rieu. You may remember the story. A mysterious plague sweeps through a small town in Algeria, and the good Dr. Rieu strives against all the odds to bring healing to the stricken citizens. He knows he cannot do it all, but he can do something. Rieu is one of those who, Camus writes, unable to be saints but refusing to bow down to pestilences, strive their utmost to be healers. And it may not be an accident that during my childhood, I had a goal of becoming a medical doctor. Here I am in ministry trying to help congregations restore health. The second dream that I would talk with you today about is to be fully present in the moment. There are many aspects to this dream of being fully present as well. One place where I try to live up to my dream is in situations when you need your pastor. When you are in the hospital or someone you love is in the hospital. When you're homebound or when you're facing a crisis in your life. Or when you're particularly joyous about something. My dream is to be fully present with you in that moment. Nothing else matters to me at that time. For those minutes, accept that we be fully present to one another. And I would thank those of you who have allowed me into your lives in this most special way. And now we have a practical way of acting out this dream, all of us, in our creation of congregational covenant, which is now underway. You have a chance to be present, listening to one another. Now, who has helped me along the way with this dream? You've heard me speak of Annie Dillard before. She has written many wonderful books, but the one I keep returning to, it's like a lodestone for me, is one of the earliest, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. A poet and naturalist, Dillard says, "Beauty and grace are performed whether we will or sense them. The least we can do is try to be there." The least we can do is try to be there. Sometimes we can cultivate opportunities for being there in times for spiritual renewal. Dillard finds her opportunities for being there as she walks the banks of Tinker Creek in Virginia. An opportunity for being there for me is through music. Listening to and making music is a way for me to escape my petty concerns and be in the moment. Music must be in the moment, otherwise it doesn't exist. So to do justice to the music, I must be fully there and commit myself to it for those moments. One of my top priorities as I move from place to place in this specialized ministry of healing is to find a congregation or to find a community chorus or a congregational choir to sing with. This year I participate in the symposium choir of the Texas Choral Consort, directed by our very own and beloved Brent Baldwin. It gives me an opportunity to give something back with fellow singers and to give something back to our audience as I am fulfilling my dream of being fully present in and fully appreciative of the moment for what it is. How do I try to live this dream here? Well, here in this congregation, creating opportunities to be present in the moment is greatly on my mind whenever I design a worship service. The quality of our music, the aesthetic spareness of our worship space, which I love, the time for silence that we observe after the meditation, the inspiring nature of many of the hymns that we sing, the appreciation of one another as we gather in community for a common cause. The purpose of all of this is to enable you to be fully present in the moment and to engage your spiritual and your aesthetic selves. Does it happen that way for you? Perhaps sometimes it all clicks for you and you are aware that your spirit is being fed. Other times, not. But it is a constant dream of mine that we shall be fully present to one another and to the opportunities of spiritual growth that surround us. My third dream for today is summed up in 5 little words. People are my first priority. What, after all, is life about if not for human relationships? Yes, peacemaking is vital, and being fully present in the moment is essential. But what does it all amount to if we have no human connections, no ties with one another? As we all know, relationships can be scary. They offer much, but they ask much too. A certain vulnerability is required for relationships to happen, a quality of reaching out and of taking advantage of opportunities to know people and to be known. I couldn't practice ministry unless I believed with all my heart that people are my first priority, unless I had that dream before me at all times. And yet I know that with the preciousness of human relationships comes pain as well. Since I leave a congregation nearly every year saying goodbye to some wonderful people of whom I have become so fond, I know firsthand the downside of relationships. And yet it is important for me to go on following my dream. May Sartin puts it this way, are we not on earth to love each other and to grow? And how does one grow except through love? Now, sometimes we get caught up in the workings of congregational life and we forget that we're in an endeavor together in which we can grow through love for one another. The love I'm speaking of is active love, love that operates through our congregational duties and business to make our relationships ones that empower ourselves and others. Here's a story that, for me, illustrates my dream that people are the first priority, even though the story is not sort of obliquely about people. You may have seen this tale in different forms. Since the early 90s, when it was circulated to the staff of Outward Bound, it comes from a speech by Ángeles Arién, and it's titled Lessons from Geese. There are five of them. Fact one, as each goose flaps its wings, it creates an uplift for the birds that follow. By flying in a V formation, the whole flock adds 71% greater flying range than if each goose flew alone. Lesson. People who share a common direction and sense of community can get where they are going quicker and easier because they are traveling on the thrust of one another. Fact two. When a goose falls out of formation, it suddenly feels the drag and resistance of flying alone. It quickly moves back into formation to take advantage of the lifting power of the bird immediately in front of it. Lesson. If we have as much sense as a goose, we stay in formation with those headed where we want to go. We are willing to accept their help and give our help to others. Fact three. When the lead goose tires, it rotates back into formation and another goose flies to the point position. Lesson. It pays to take turns doing the hard tasks and sharing leadership. As with geese, people are interdependent on each other's skills, capabilities, and unique arrangements of gifts, talents, and resources. Fact four. The geese flying formation honk to encourage those up front to keep up their speed. Lesson. We need to make sure our honking is encouraging. In groups, the encouragement to stand by one's heart values and core values and encourage the heart and core values of others is the quality of honking that we seek. And fact five, when a goose gets sick, wounded, or shot down, two geese drop out of formation and follow it down to help and protect it. They stay with it until it dies or is able to fly again. Then they launch out with another formation or they catch up with the flock. Lesson. If we have as much sense as geese, we will stand by each other in difficult times as well as when we are strong. This brings us back full circle to my first dream of power rising from people acting in concert. For if we empower one another, help one another go forth with renewed strength and commitment, it must not stop with this congregation. We can also empower others, folks in the community who are suffering, who are struggling for dignity, who need our encouragement and our presence to go forth to right wrongs and to act for the common good. We empower one another through redemptive love. And when we love persons whom we will never know and who will never know us, that love is called justice. May our dream of justice for all be an integral part of our common life together. Now you've heard three of my dreams, that I might be an instrument of peace, that I might be fully present in the moment, and that I might always keep in mind that people are my priority. These dreams are what make me, the unique person I am. I believe that we can share our unique dreams and live them out in the remaining time that we have, that we will all be in ministry here together. I end by paraphrasing Unitarian philosopher and essayist Henry David Thoreau. Are your dreams but castles in the air? That is where they belong. Now build foundations under them. So may it be.
May we choose to inhabit our days, to allow our living to open us, to make us less afraid, more accessible, to loosen our hearts until they become wings, torches, promises.